When Abby Mott sets up shop on a street corner, she sits down behind a little folding table with a typewriter on it. She puts out a cardboard sign. It reads, "Name a price, pick a subject, get a poem." The busking poet says it really is as simple as it sounds.
You decide what you're going to pay me, and I will write you something based off of whatever it is you want me to write about. Whether it be a word or an idea or just anything. A lot of the time people, when asked what they want, they have to think about it for sometimes several minutes. It's almost like I'm on the spot, but they're also on the spot too.
That's street corner poet Abby Mott, as profiled in a documentary by Barrett Rudick. The film is called A Place of Truth. Barrett followed his subject around the country with a small film crew. He chronicled her nomadic travels from city to city and her transactions with strangers on street corners. He's doing some traveling of his own these days, touring his movie around the country, and he's here this week with us on The Signal. And Barrett, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me here.
So Barrett, how did you meet Abby Mott, and what inspired you to want to tell her story?
Essentially, I was a customer on the street. I was taking a walk in downtown Portland and went by Powell's bookstore and saw her on the sidewalk, and I'd never seen anything quite like that. And I decided I got to get a poem. And in that time that she was writing my poem, I had what I'd call an instant inspiration. I really thought, this is a film.
It was destiny in the making. Here, how lucky for her that one of her customers happened to be an accomplished and skilled filmmaker. So this film was born. And one of the nice features, one of the nice sort of pacing devices in this film, Barrett, is that after Abby writes a poem for a customer, when you're following around, you'll actually kind of stop that customer to take a minute before they head off to read the poem they've just been given. I want to share one of these moments here. This is a woman right after she purchased a poem from Abby for, I think, $5.
My name is Alia Madden. I live here in Brooklyn for the time being, but I will be going down to a island in Honduras in a little less than a month and stay down there for a few months. And so I asked Abigail over there to write me a poem about moving to a tropical island. And this is what she wrote me. Under the light of the mango tree, its branches heavy with fruit, I take my time in walking reflection, a place where no familiar faces merge with mine. Sand underfoot, the ocean grumbling in its hungry chaos of creatures, dodging human flesh, gone deep under where it's hard to see, the reflections of sun, matter, inconsequential time, left behind.
It's interesting, Barrett Rudick, to hear the emotion in this woman's voice. This is a really surprisingly emotional experience for people who may have initially walked up to Abby and sort of considered her as kind of a midway novelty act.
You know, Aaron, when I had this inspiration to do the film, part of structurally what I thought about was to have this conceit of people reading poems on the street. I wanted both the context of the street and also their very immediate reaction and performance, if you will, in interpreting this thing that's written very specifically for them. I didn't anticipate that things would be as emotional as they were in some instances, so that was, you know, just a gift to have that. In that scene that we just heard, you can see when you're watching the film, like a tear drop from her eye onto this piece of paper, which is just this also wonderful moment. And there were many other poems read that we shot that, of course, couldn't make it in the film. But I do think that I also wanted it as a almost like a Greek chorus, if you will, something that's commenting on the other themes that are presented in the film. We see a person on the street close to where the poem was actually written, and it's very much a set piece for them to, you know, express the poem in their own way.
You know, you use the word immediate. And that really is part of the magic of this experience, is the immediacy, well, for the poet to be paid on the spot, and then for these customers to have this custom-made document, and then to get to read it as the poet is sort of smiling up from her typewriter, having just written it.
One of the other characters in the film, Matt Robinson, another street poet, coins this phrase called the immediate exchange, where there's really no no middle filter. Abby is approached with a subject. She composes this creative piece. She's paid for it. It's immediately both consumed and completed and, you know, comprehended all in a matter of minutes. Yeah. And, you know, compare that to people who work in the creative services, you know, either for clients or even writers, even poets who are trying to get their work published. And there's so many different levels and steps to get to that point. You know, Abby might write in a big day on the street 20 poems, right, and all of them are paid for and all of them are custom created for these people that have an immediate reaction to it, too. So I kind of got the sense when I first met her that there was something there about that.
You make these really interesting connections throughout the film, these sort of subtle visual connections between what Abby is doing with her poetry and what a tarot card reader does with customers. They actually set up shop next to each other on some of these street corners. And at one point she says,
I try to listen to people and like try to sometimes go underneath maybe what they're telling me. Like, no matter what the subject is, I'll take a few moments to think about maybe what the first line will be, and then I just go. When somebody gives me a subject that I find really interesting, I have the best time in the world. I feel like my typing takes on a certain rhythm, and in a way, it's like I'm performing as well as writing.
It really seems like there's a certain fundamental human intuition at work here during these moments when Abby sizes up a customer and then just starts improvising. And it is kind of like she's a fortune teller at work or a soothsayer.
Very much so. There's something both deeply intuitive about what she does and also very grounded in communication, you know, similar to, you know, how jazz musicians might communicate with each other in that improvisational mode. She listens very carefully to what people have to say. She does, you know, what the street poets call maybe this poetry interview, gathers some key information, and then kind of brings that inside and makes something from that. And I think taps into something deeper than the people are expecting, really. Oftentimes they'll say, well, how did you know that about me? And I think there's something that she's giving back to these people that goes beyond, you know, a piece of writing. I think that it is a collaboration in a sense. She wouldn't have, you know, gotten this subject on her own necessarily, but so that's presented by a person's presence and by the information they provide and just by who they are. And also, it's oftentimes colored just by the texture of what's going on in the street and where she's at. And you'll notice in some of the poems, you'll sense something about the city that she's in. There's some of these New Orleans poems that are referencing something about the New Orleans culture or what she's experiencing in that place.
Maybe a lesson here for overeducated literary poets who hold themselves up in a room with no distractions and torture over one line for 8 hours, right?
Exactly. It's much more free-flowing and actually requires quick thinking, because oftentimes she'll have a line of people waiting for their poem to be read. So she cannot spend, you know, hours working on this. It will lose her money or lose her customers.
And we should say, Barrett, I don't know if we've mentioned this, but she's a young woman. At the time of the film, she was 21 years old.
Actually, when I met her, she was 20. She turned from 20 to 21 in the course of shooting the film.
And she's not a college-educated literary arts major. She's a kid who went into a bookstore one day and found a Sylvia Plath book and was just like, this is for me.
That's right. I mean, she does have a background in her childhood of being a voracious reader. She did start writing poetry at age 17, but really had not done this as a money-making endeavor until a couple of months before I met her. So I'm capturing her at a moment where there's some metamorphosis going on.
Yeah.
You know, she's really transforming into a working poet, into really finding her artistic voice, really, too.
You're tuned to The Signal. I'm Aaron Henkin. I'm talking with Barrett Rudick. His film, A Place of Truth, follows traveling street corner poet Abby Mott. And here's another one of Abby's poems, as read by someone who's just received it from her, fresh off the typewriter.
This is a poem that Abby wrote for me on patience. Rising beneath the frame, a calm motion swept up. Like so many cobwebs, their threads shine clear, the notes eyes carry when horror films roll there. Cotton screams, rotating dreams give way to a fabulous display of coats, hung dry on racks. A memory bleeds the colors collected in a pool. Scryed, swim there, the water caresses, rest, be cleansed in the pools of reverence. Abigail Mott, December 15th, 2011, French Quarter, NOLA.
I love that poem. I'm so glad you played that.
That's actually a poem, Barrett, that Abby gave to one of her couch surfing hosts when she was in New Orleans. You get the sense from this film that she's made a high art of couch surfing. She really is, at this point, a nomad. This is, you know, as she explains to customers, not a hobby for her. She's really out there on a limb, for better or worse.
That was one of the things that drew me to the subject from the beginning, was this is someone who is not, you know, working a 9-to-5 and then thinking that I want to do this at night. If only I had the time to do this. But she's doing it as her full-time deal, really. And I think that people wish that they could do what she's doing,
yeah.
In a sense of, you know, pursuing their dream of being creative as a full-time thing, or traveling even in this kind of free-form nomadic way. But for many people, that's not an option because of their fear of letting go of their 9-to-5 or getting out of their comfort zone.
And one of the things that really kind of raises the stakes in this film and really engages you as a viewer is that it's never really clear whether our protagonist here is like a hero or an anti-hero, if you know what I mean. I mean, she's not like a shiny, happy person, really. I mean, she's flawed in some ways. She's heartbroken. She's sad. She's clearly out there searching for something. It's interesting you interview Abby's mom and dad. They're back home in her hometown of Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And you can hear in their voices that they're struggling to come to peace with this path that their daughter has taken. I want to play a bit of this conversation that you captured with them.
She's my daughter. I love her, you know. She does things that bother me, but I can't spend my whole life obsessing about it, you know? Cry me, there's enough stuff that I do that's wrong. I got time worrying about the stuff she does wrong, you know?
I don't think about what she's doing too much, or it makes me too fearful. So my solution is not to think about it. And I pray. And I cry.
Are you proud of her?
I am proud of her. She's done something I could never do, but, and I hope she does well at it. I'm happy that people are generous to her and help her so that she can do this. It's a good thing. She can make her choices now.
Parental worry and pride all mixed together there, right?
And people in the audience who happen to be parents definitely find those elements compelling. That piece that you played with her mother saying, you know, I wish that I could do this maybe, but didn't. And then I intentionally wanted to include my question in there off camera about, you know, are you proud of her? And she is very proud of her. And she's almost in that moment releasing her out into the world of adulthood and having opportunities for learning more that maybe is beyond what the parents are going to teach her. And it's a great transition into some of the end themes of the film that follow that piece.
You've got the parental perspective there. You've also got a really nice perspective from Abby's hometown friend, another young woman, Ashley. This is someone obviously very close to Abby, who's known her for a long time as they were growing up, just trying to work through what must be motivating her to wander around in this way.
I think she wants the connection with people. You know, it's the excitement of being somewhere new and who you're going to meet and who you're going to fall in love with. It's the essence and the basis of her poetry. Who is going to change her life and who's going to change her writing? I think that's what she's searching for as she travels.
Here's another one of Abby's poems as read by one of her customers on the street.
In the eye, the belly rocks. Makeshift pigeons out of paper tear. And a voice, bellowing, from a loudspeaker declares, "This is it." I shudder, collapsed, without embrace, to the last rain.
Barrett Rudick, what did you see in the eyes of the people who came up to Abby Mott on those street corners, engaged with her? What do you think makes her such a riveting figure to people?
I think it does go beyond the novelty, although certainly seeing someone sitting on the street with a typewriter is an unusual sight for most people. So that is a draw. I can't see her doing this without a typewriter, actually.
It would lose some of its mystique.
It would. The you know, laptop computer or even just writing on a pad, it just wouldn't have it. I think that people want a pause in their daily routine. Most of these people are, you know, not on a mission to find a street poet that day on their walk to the office or walk back to their hotel if they're traveling. And so there's something engaging in her personality that is visible, even if you're just a passerby, you know, that you can, and this is what, you know, I sense too. If you see her writing, it's almost like this trance-like state that she's in. She's very focused on her work. There's a certain physicality even about that. Once you stop and talk to her and you realize, okay, I'm in this too. You know, this is going to be about me. I am going to be patient while I wait for this poem to be written. And in the reading of it, there's a moment of appreciation that something's been captured about them that they might have felt but wouldn't have the words to express. There's a line, actually, that Abby has in the film as we see her sitting on the street in New Orleans and people are passing her by on the sidewalk. People were breaking my heart left and right, just noticing how much love people had to give and how little of it so many people were receiving, and how in some ways a lot of people were very eager to be truthful or say something honest, but not really having the words for it. That seems to crystallize what her mission is.
Barrett, she obviously touched you as you were making this film. You mentioned meeting her as a customer, someone who she wrote a poem for. And then she has since written another poem for you after the film was finished. And you guys have actually traveled around together and on the festival circuit. I wonder if, as we wrap up, you might read that poem for us.
Abby's actually written a few poems for me. You know, I treasure them all. This is one of my favorites. And this was written after we had done a few festivals and she had observed me in the audience. And it really captures something of what I'm really going through. And the poem is called Festivals. I am composed in my seat while I review reactions from those around me. Will they feel it? I lurch for a belly laugh surfacing from my present critics. I've heard festival goers expect a worthy show. They want humor, beauty, sadness, every conceivable emotion woven tightly in frame. Then the hour where I've sat unbearably still and noticed every mistake, I've wondered, why did I embark on this journey? Before the blessed end, credits roll, and someone I've never met walks up to me and says, "My God, what a beautiful creation." And that that's actually happened. You know, like it's my own moment of immediate exchange, if you will.
Right, right. We're going to wrap up here in just a minute, Barrett, but I do want to play this one final clip from your film when you ask Abby Mott to define authenticity.
Authenticity is knowing yourself and speaking from a place of truth and being very honest about who you are and what it is you're doing and being comfortable with who you are.
Do you feel that way when you're sitting in your chair?
Yes, when I'm sitting in my chair typing, I feel very authentic. Here I am. I'll write you a poem. I'm not gonna tell you it's the greatest poem you've ever read, but it'll be true to now.
The words of traveling street corner poet Abby Mott. She is the subject of Barrett Rudick's film, A Place of Truth. You can find out more about the movie on the web at aplaceoftruth.com. And Barrett, I want to thank you for this film and thank you for being here.
Thank you, Aaron. It's been quite a pleasure being here.
And I should say that Barrett is going to be here in Baltimore next week to host a screening of this film at the Creative Alliance's Patterson Theater on Eastern Avenue. That's happening next Thursday evening, June 26th at 7:30 p.m. And you can find details for that screening online at creativealliance.org. For The Signal, I'm Aaron Henkin.